You're listening to The Human Upgrade with Dave Asprey. Today's episode, we're going to talk about longevity, which is actually why I started the biohacking movement. I was so frustrated that no one besides me, who was under 30, would come to an anti-aging education group in Palo Alto, California, 2 minutes from Google's headquarters. I said, well, we need to find some words that tie together control of your own biology. And when you're young, you want power, you want energy, you want attractiveness. And then in middle age, you want longevity. And actually, not even longevity. In middle age, you want extended energy. And as you start realizing, okay, there's some aging stuff happening, then you start wanting longevity. So there's sort of this arc, but it's all the same things. So if you learn to do this when you're 20 years old, you'll just get better grades and have a better career and be calmer and happier and have better relationships and better community because your energy is better. And when you're 70, you're going to like what you look like and feel like. But if you start it when you're 70, you can still get benefits. It's just harder. So I'm like, what do we call these tools? Well, we call them biohacking. And one of the areas of interest for me, two of my books have been about this. It's about fasting. And no, I don't think men or women should fast every single day. In fact, my second fasting book was to correct misperceptions about fasting that happened when people get very excited about something in biohacking and decide they're going to do it every day forever and without regard to outcomes. So there's a fasting mimetic or a substance that gives your body the effects of fasting that is a postbiotic. And I wrote about it in Superhuman, my longevity book. It's called spermidine. And you've heard episodes on it before. So today, I've asked Dr. Elizabeth Yerth to come on the show to talk about the new research in spermidine since the publication of my book and since our last podcast. She's got 30 years of clinical experience in orthopedics, cellular medicine, and regenerative medicine. I reviewed my labs with her, and she just has a great mind for thinking about things. She runs the Boulder Longevity Institute, where she's medical director with a focus on nutrition, hormones, and get this, human enhancement. Are you allowed to say that? Dr. Yerth, how dare you, doctor? So, what do your colleagues say when you say, I'm enhancing humans? Are they down with that, or do they just like kind of snub their noses?
Really why I had to leave my orthopedic practice and, and start Boulder Longevity Institute is because that didn't go over well.
Yeah. The funny thing is half the doctors who are complaining probably come in the back door after hours asking for treatments because they don't like being fat and tired either. And somehow antibiotics just don't fix it. It's weird.
So I do love to hear you say that, you know, and like most of you guys who are probably in the collective and stuff, you know, a lot of us didn't get into this field because it didn't exist, unfortunately, when I was 20. But my kids are in their 20s. Everybody in my office is in their 30s. And what we're trying to do is actually sort of, you know, start convincing people in their 20s and 30s ultimately that you have to actually start doing this stuff. Then you're right. Any time you can start doing it is going to be beneficial. But how do we actually reach out? And so those of you guys who are my age or, you know, in their 60s and you know, have kids in their 20s and, you know, work with people, we're truly trying to engage them. My kids, you know a whole lot more about supplements than most of their friends do. And so I'd love to hear you say that. And I think it's one of the things we really have to sort of work on is spreading the message, because as you know, Dave, a lot of us, our followers, our people finally feel poorly, right? And then they come looking for something to make them feel better. And we really do have to start thinking about in our 20s and 30s, what can we do at that point so that we aren't playing, you know, trying to reverse the clock, but we just don't let the clock age as much. So I love to hear you say that. And I think that's one of our goals, that we need to really try and reach that younger population a little bit more.
You've got the words. When I was 20, even though I was fat and really unhealthy, I had brain fog, longevity wasn't my jam. It was, I want my brain to work again. It was enhancement, cognitive enhancement. I just want my brain back, I want my energy back. Sure, I like to lose weight. But when you say human enhancement, I'm like, sign me up, right? And it's the same thing, longevity and enhancement. And that's why longevity is one of the three main pillars of the biohacking movement. And I'm just so excited that now you can have, you know, you with 30 years of experience out there talking about that openly. And the fact is, there will always be people in every profession who do things that some others don't like or do like, and it doesn't really matter. So you're going to do what works in your clinical data, and they're going to do what they think works. And well, one of you is going to be younger and healthier, and your patients will be as well, and depending on who's right. And that's why we get to shop to find the care team that we want. And I recommend for listeners, your physician, if they're in the functional world or longevity world, ought to be able to have a detailed conversation with you about Spermidine, which is why we're going to share this with you today. I should mention, you are on the advisory board at Spermidine Life. I've worked with Spermidine Life because they were the very first spermidine supplement you could get in the U.S. I wrote about Spermidine in Superhuman, but I couldn't buy it.
Right.
So I imported illegally some Japanese probiotics that allegedly made Spermidine, and I ordered research chemicals in a little vial, and I did take them, but $150 for 10 grams of Spermidine was kind of expensive. And when you get research grade high potency Spermidine, well, it kind of smelled and tasted like its namesake, which wasn't great, my biohacker perspective. So, and by the way, guys, if you're listening, you can tell what its namesake is. Anyway, tell me about it. As I know some of our listeners know, but what is Spermidine? Where does it come from? And why do we care?
Yeah, you and I are the same boat. That I actually got interested in this product way before it was available. And I did the same exact thing you did. And I got interested because what I study is cellular medicine. I study cellular pathways.
Right.
It's, you know, it's the tedious part of what we do. It's looking at the cell and all of the pathways, all those biochemical pathways that you thought you could forget in medical school. And actually, when I was in medical school, most of them didn't even exist.
Right.
We didn't know about them. So we have an organization called Seed Scientific Research and Performance. That's what we do, is we sort of study all these cellular pathways. So years ago, we started looking at this, what's called a polyamine flux pathway, and said, oh my gosh, this is a really important pathway. And spermidine is a really critical player. So I did the same thing you did. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need this. And I started looking for it, and I couldn't find it. It didn't, you know, like you, and I'm not quite as gutsy with research chemicals, so I didn't go down that road. Found some product that had some spermidine in it, but really was sort of stuck. And that's really how I stumbled on it. Was funny because I was calling. And this was over a year's period, and I finally, you know, got a hold of somebody who was from, you know, this Austrian company, Longevity Labs, that was trying to actually branch into the U.S. And they were, number one, astounded that I knew anything about this, because nobody knew anything about it. And the reason, just for your listeners, I'm on the advisory board. I'm not a PEED member. I don't get PEED actually to promote anything. And so I'm on the advisory board just because I was kind of really so interested in this molecule and really wanted it to be a success here in the U.S. So that's really why I got on the advisory board, is to really help bridge it here in the U.S. and for no other reason. So I truly use this product and recommend this product because I believe in it. For those of you guys who, you know, Spermidine has now been around a while, right? Back in when you and I first talked, nobody had heard about it. It was just a weird word that had the word sperm in it, and nobody had heard about it. And now there's a dozen products on the market that have spermidine in them. And so it's made its way into more of the just regular community of people who understand longevity and biohacking. But for those of you who don't really know what it is a polyamine. And polyamines are, there's three of them. There's putrescine, spermidine, and spermine. And they're all actually critically important. And it's kind of critically important, you have to remember this fact, that they're all sort of together. Just isolating spermidine is actually not going to do you a lot of good. You actually have to all three of these together. So you really need all of the polyamines in the body. Our body is really imperatively, it relies on balance. And when we throw a whole bunch of one thing in and we disturb that balance, it's not a good idea. And so really you want all three of these. Now, most things that have polyamines in them are largely spermidine, which is why you can call a polyamine product spermidine. But it really, typically, if it's a good polyamine product, it has all three of those things. So basically what spermidine as a polyamine does, it's found in every cell of your body. And in fact, we actually know that it is so critical to the survival of cells that if you take it out of a cell, the cell will die. It is absolutely 100% critical to cell life.
So we could call this episode "Why You Are Addicted to Spermidine."
Yeah, I mean, you have to have it. You know, you would die without. So you're exactly right. So so if you don't take spermidine, where can you get it? It does come in our diet. It's just in smaller amounts. It's hard to get enough of it. Our body can make it. Our intestine can make it. So our intestinal cells, you talked about it as a postbiotic, it can be actually made. So it can actually help our gut microbiome, and we can actually make more of our own. So it can help sort of optimize that.
Hey there, biohacker. here's some pillow talk for you. When you wake up tomorrow morning, you'll be fully rested with a youthful glow everywhere. But why? It has nothing to do with the fun you might have had the night before and everything to do with what you lay your head on at night. Yeah, we're talking about your actual pillow. The folks at Envy designed an incredible mulberry silk pillow that supports your head and does unique things for your skin as you get some sleep. Envy uses an incredibly soft silk, and then they infuse it with copper and zinc ions that work in studies to soothe your skin and boost collagen production. The combination of copper and zinc is antimicrobial. It can reduce inflammation, and it can promote healing in your skin. If that sounds amazing, look at the science, and then upgrade your sleep and your skin health at envypillow.com. Use code DAVE10 at checkout. Even though you can't see it, quantum energy pulses through everything. It's all around you and it's in you. And there's science that backs up the fact that your body is a quantum system. But toxins and stress can throw your energy off balance. And that's where a company called Quantum Upgrade steps in. Quantum Upgrade offers groundbreaking products to help you get your balance back. Quantum Upgrade tests each product on humans, and the results show that the technology can boost blood flow and even reverse blood clots in minutes. The latest and greatest study shows that Quantum Upgrade increases ATP production by up to 29%. And the newest ability is that you can now use Quantum Upgrade to increase your level of consciousness based on the Hawkins Map of Consciousness. If you don't know what that means, do some research or listen to the show because it's impressive and fun to learn about, and it means something. Visit quantumupgrade.io and get a 15-day free trial. Enjoy. Just worth paying attention to the history of vitamins and supplements. So amines are a class of biological compounds that we were easily able to detect a while ago. So the word vitamin is actually vital amine put together. So it turns out the B vitamins, they're not amines. So we made up this word for the original supplements that came out there, which were based on polyamines. And then we kind of warped it to say a bunch of compounds that we have classified, and we, of course, missed a bunch. And then we kind of forgot about the polyamines that we named vitamins after. So we're kind of going back to our roots here.
Right.
And let's see, traditional foods. Things like wheat germ.
Wheat germ is probably one of the biggest sources, but you can find other things. You can find it in peas and soybeans, and there's other foods that have it as well.
But very small amounts. Even
very small wheat amounts,
germ,
right.
Which has, quote, high amounts. You still have to eat, you know, a cup or two of wheat germ to get a meaningful dose, right?
You do. And interestingly enough, you can't actually, every wheat germ does not have the same amount of polyamines in it as well. It appears to be specific strains of wheat germs seem to actually be more robust and a pure form of these polyamines. So you actually have to, and there, for instance, most American wheat germ seems to have much lower quantities of it. And so that's why, you know, the product Sporting Life comes from an Austrian, you know, company that actually has to go through some great lengths to actually get a really good source of wheat germ to make these polyamines. So it really is not quite so easy as we think.
American wheat germ does come with free glyphosate, though.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
Yeah,
you get that.
It's in our soil. We spray it on there. So, guys, if you're looking for a source of extra glyphosate, you know, right. Monsanto's finest, you could get American wheat germ.
Right. If you want cancer high on your list of things to die from, that's a good thing to do.
There's also the amount of gluten. American wheat is hard red wheat, where wheat germ would come from. Lower spermidine, but also much higher and more allergenic gluten and gluten-like compounds, which is why a lot of people can handle European soft wheat, but they can't eat American wheat. So I would say you want a European source, but there is still gluten in wheat in Europe, even if it's less problematic. So when you concentrate wheat germ, how much of the gluten are we pulling out?
That's an interesting thing, because when you read the bottle, say, you know, if you're celiac or gluten sensitive, you know, be careful with this product. And I think truly there's some very interesting data. So, you know, what causes the sensitivity to wheat in both celiacs and people of gluten sensitivity is what's called tissue transglutamase. And very interesting. So if you don't activate tissue transglutamase, if the wheat doesn't activate tissue transglutamase, that's what creates the immune response, is the tissue transglutamase. It's just that the wheat will activate this tissue transglutamase that creates an immune response in some people. So one of the treatments for celiac that is really being investigated are these tissue transglutamase inhibitors. Very interestingly, one of the competitive inhibitors to TTG, to tissue transglutamase, is spermidine. So when you eat wheat germ that's very rich in spermidine, you should not actually get an immune response from it, because it's actually blocking the immune stimulating agent. So I use it. I'm pretty gluten sensitive. I can take spermidine no problem. Most of my patients can't. I will say some of my patients have had issues. You know, is it the spermidine? Is it something else? I don't know. But be wary of it. But basically, putrescine, cysteamine, spermidine are all tissue transglutamase inhibitors. In theory, they should actually help celiac patients. I will also count that, remember, tissue transglutamase is not just in celiac diseases and gluten sensitivities. It's linked to cancers. It's linked to Parkinson's. It's linked to Alzheimer's. So inhibiting tissue transglutamase is actually a beneficial thing. And it's probably one of the benefits of spermidine is actually on this TTG inhibition.
All right. That's super helpful. So guys, I don't handle gluten particularly well, although when I'm in Europe and I take gluten-degrading enzymes, I can eat European wheat for a couple of days and I'm okay. So if you ever see me eating baklava or croissants in Turkey or France or Dubai or somewhere, well, now you know why. Because, well, it doesn't have glyphosate. It's a different species. And at least I can handle that. But if you are, you know, the tiniest trace of a whiff of any kind of wheat anywhere on the planet messes with you, then you wouldn't want to use a wheat germ-derived spermidine, which is the best source of spermidine that I'm familiar with. And I do take spermidine live, and I've been taking it, well, ever since it came out, because like you, a friend of mine, Hani from Switzerland, sent me a bottle, and I said, oh, this is great. So we started reaching out saying, can we get some? I'm a big fan of the stuff. And the research that I published in my book about spermidine as, you know, one of these new longevity compounds that you couldn't yet buy when the book came out, was the convincing evidence that autophagy is important for longevity. And this is basically breaking down cells that need to get out of there and replacing them with new, young, strong cells. And it turns out spermidine does that in a similar way to fasting and a similar way to rapamycin.
You're right that spermidine is a fasting mimetic in a sense, but it actually may be the key player to autophagy, that without it, if you fasted and you didn't have adequate spermidine levels, that you might actually not be able to induce it. And that's because what spermidine does is it actually activates something or increases expression of something called acetyltransferase EP300. Which you're probably familiar with.
Right, yeah, define that for us.
You know, so EP300 is a crucial molecule that binds to something called Beclin-1, LC3, that are absolutely essential to activate autophagy. So when EP300, and aspirin actually is an EP300 increasing thing too, which is why aspirin has some anti-cancer properties.
Right.
EP300 is so crucial to activate LC3 and Beclin-1 and activate autophagy that without it, you cannot induce autophagy. So in theory, if you are fasting, but you didn't have adequate spermidine levels, and if you're not eating, are you taking in any spermidine? No, because if you're not taking a supplement, you're just getting it from your diet, you're not eating any, you may actually not be getting some of the benefits of fasting. Now, we don't know that for sure, but if you look at pathway mechanisms, and you have a molecule that's absolutely critical to instigate the proteins that are responsible for autophagy, it makes sense, at least in my mind, that you have to have this molecule on board. So I don't know that I even call it a fasting mimetic anymore as much as I call it an essential nutrient for autophagy.
So it's actually a fasting enabler.
Yeah, I would say yes. That's probably a better term for it. Now, can I induce the autophagy without fasting by using it? Yes, I mean, I'm going to get more adequate autophagy. I think fasting has some other benefits as well besides autophagy. So, you know.
Oh, of course. Fasting is a broad spectrum thing.
Right.
All right. So it sounds like you're saying that if someone had a choice between taking spermidine and eating a schedule without restricted eating windows other than, you know, don't eat late at night, versus intermittent fasting versus going on rapamycin, it sounds like spermidine would be your number one recommendation.
You know, my belief in aging and longevity is you're going to have to attack it from multiple pathways, right? So I recommend spermidine and I recommend rapamycin and, you know, for the right people, fasting. I don't know that fasting works for everybody. I'm pretty thin, I'm pretty lean. Fasting is hard for me because I lose a fair amount of muscle when I fast, even short fast. It's hard for me to get enough protein, and then I can't exercise. And if I can't exercise, I go completely crazy and nobody likes me. But I think that when you look at rapamycin in its at least somewhat inhibition of mTOR2, that, you know, those are pieces that, you know, that are another player. And I, you know, we know that we're not going to find one magical bullet that stops aging. It's going to be attacking it from all of these different realms. Probably the only one magic bullet to stop aging is exercise, because it attacks every one of those pathways. Probably beyond that, so if you were to take one pill, it would be exercise. That would be the closest you could come to being one thing that you could do. But I don't just say spermidine is more important. I think it is essential to autophagy, but rapamycin may still be a critical player too to blocking other pathways.
Okay, that makes sense. So order these for me. Fasting, then spermidine, then rapamycin? You do all three?
When I fast for very short periods of time, again, because I lose muscle, and muscle's my kind of priority in my life. So I used to do 3 or 4 day fasts. It's probably what you really need to get to really induce that true mTOR inhibition, right? So if I'm really, and then the reboost of mTOR with refeeding. So I fast really for much briefer periods of time now, rarely more than a 24-hour fast. So in my book, I'll put spermidine kind of, I have everybody stay on it all the time. We'll talk about in my practice, I use it in much higher doses for other things, but it's a baseline thing. I have people stay on a maintenance dose all the time to get that autophagy really, you know, enabled. Because again, if it is the one thing I have to have on board, and again, there's not a whole lot of things we think that are, you know, that are going to do have the same effect as spermidine, then it's going to have to be up there if you want that autophagy effect. There's other things, obviously, that induce autophagy. So I put fasting for the right people with the right timing. I don't know that we have the perfect, and I know you're very expert on fasting. I don't know that we have the perfect answer to what is the length of fast that you really need to do. And, you know, and so I like fasting when I'm trying to reset an immune system in somebody, you know, doing things like that. When people are more now stable, I find fasting sometimes to not fall, it falls lower on my list. So I would put spermidine. I have most of my patients on rapamycin. I take rapamycin. You probably take rapamycin. Mm-hmm. I have most of my patients on rapamycin. It is high on my list in one of my longevity protocols. And there's a whole lot of other things.
The science on fasting is, it's really clear. You need to fast exactly as much as your body needs today, given your current state. That's what it really comes down to. There is no fasting window that works for everyone. And if your normal fasting window that works is, you know, I do an 18-hour fast most days, and that's really worked for me. If you do that for 2 years and you fix your metabolism, you might find that you get lean.
Right.
And that you don't need 18 hours a day.
You don't need it as much. Right. That's exactly right. I agree. I used to fast a lot more than I do now, you know, and I find that I don't need the longer fast anymore to sort of keep my body habitus where I want it. You know, but I will, if I've gotten sick or things like that, sometimes to kind of reset my immune system, or I have an autoimmune disease like you do, you know, with your Lyme and mold issues. Sometimes you get these, you slip back, and I'll do a little fast to try and reboot my immune system.
You know, using it as a tool, just like ketosis, being in unending ketosis or unending overtraining or unending overfasting, all of those in men and women always lead to the same excessive cortisol and depletion.
Right.
So they're just tools that you can use. But spermidine is one of those tools you can use every day, because it doesn't induce those, even though you're getting a lot of different benefits.
Right.
So for you, what's a maintenance dose of spermidine life? Like how many capsules, how many milligrams of spermidine is that?
That's going to depend on who you are. So, you know, one of the big critiques of spermidine, you know, when everybody's like, okay, spermidine is the elixir of life, then this article came out, which was then publicized by certain naysayers of everything. And there's, there's these people who get on and they are very big at taking these newest and greatest things and picking them apart. And sometimes it's good, and sometimes maybe just leaning too much on false information or on one article. So a study came out in Germany in April of 2023, and it basically said that when you measured plasma levels of spermidine, when somebody took spermidine, there was no measurable plasma level, and said, obviously, this is a worthless supplement because you can't even get plasma levels of spermidine when you take it. So, you know, all these people are telling you to take a product that you can't even measure in your system above what baseline placebo measures do is not doing you any good. And what they did, however, find was there was high levels of spermine. So spermidine can turn into spermine, and secondarily, spermine can turn back into spermidine.
Is spermidine useful or not?
So spermidine is useful. So spermidine definitely has some, so spermidine turns into spermine. Spermidine definitely has some systemic effects, probably more on the gut. So some of its really beneficial effects have to be in the gut, which is why it's probably found in metabolism. Now, the big point they failed to mention here is where is spermidine doing its job? It's not floating around in your plasma, actually. It goes very rapidly into the cell. So it's proteins that pick it up very rapidly into the cell, because inside the cell is where the mechanism we talked about to induce autophagy, that's intracellular. So nobody's measured intracellular levels of spermidine. We know it's getting into you and being metabolized because you see high levels of spermidine. So we know it's getting into you. It's not as though it's not doing anything because it's metabolite. There's lots of things we can't measure very well in plasma. It's why when we look at even some of the B vitamins, it's better measured in some of the urine metabolites because those are a better measure of the levels, because these drugs are either rapidly picked up or rapidly metabolized. So I'm a big naysayer of that. And the fact that I think they prove, by proving that spermine was in higher levels when you took it. So basically, when you look at that effect, that we have to get spermidine into the cell, you know, and we don't have to have these high plasma levels, what dose is the right level? We're basing a lot of these studies, obviously, on mice, like we do a lot of things. But it appears that at a baseline level, you know, if you're healthy and young and you really are just trying to take this drug to just sort of, or the supplement, to just sort of stay nice and healthy and young, then 1 milligram is probably enough. I much more commonly find that I would recommend a little higher. So spermidine has a spermidine, they have a spermidine extra that has 1.5 milligrams. I very often recommend in even healthy people to go up to that level.
I did 4 of the Spermidine Life heavy pills. So that's about 6 milligrams a day.
6 milligrams, right. And that's what I typically recommend too. So honestly, I think more is better. I think we're oftentimes dosing a lot of things at a point that probably they are a little underdosed. So I think it's probably a good maintenance dose to maintain good levels if you're a young, healthy person. But if you get sick, if you have a disease state, if you have cardiovascular disease, or you have early cognitive decline or dementia, or you have liver problems or kidney problems, you need more. So in my practice, I'm much more often using a 6 milligram dose. And even in healthy people, I will cycle them on that 6 milligram dose, because I think you truly need a really high dose to, you know, massively induce autophagy, right? So if I want to, so can I keep autophagy going? Probably with a small dose, I can sort of keep a stable level. But I think if you really want to get a big clean the house, you need to use a higher dose and maybe do that on a periodic basis. So when I'm treating my patients who have disease states, I'm much more often using the 6 milligram dose.
Okay.
There's no toxicity even at high doses that's been seen with this. I mean, it's a food. So we really haven't seen toxicity associated with higher doses. And it may well be, and especially like in this study, when they measured spermine levels, more was better. More raised spermine more. So it may well be that you could even take more in people who have more disease states. And we're finding all these different things now that spermidine is helpful for, like liver, like kidney, you know, like brain and heart. I mean, the heart studies are pretty impressive.
You said you like to cycle spermidine. Do you recommend that you stop taking it for a day or two, or what's the cycle look like?
So all people take the 1.5 milligrams on a baseline level, and then I will cycle a little bit. I think that you may be getting, when you gain to that 6 milligram dose, do you want to maintain that 6 milligram dose? I think if you're well and you're doing fine, probably you want to cycle lower for a little while and then go back up, just like you're doing right with your fasts and refeeds. A little bit of let's cycle it higher, induce a little bit more of an autophagy state, and then cycle it down a little bit. So I do think, and I believe this with a lot of supplements, that you're better off sort of supplementing things up and down, not maintaining doses at the same level all the time of things. I think that that just keeps the body more homeostatic and it keeps these cellular processes more stable. Our body doesn't like when we overload it with one thing. Our cells are really, really, really smart. And we see that a lot in our world. You know, Dave, is that, you know, people are on a whole lot of supplements and they're taking them every day. And you may actually start to overload certain cellular pathways. And that becomes an issue. And I see it. I see one pathway overloaded start to create problems.
Yeah.
You know, so I do think, like, if you're taking 6 milligram every day, do that for a while, go off of it for a little while, go to just a low maintenance dose for a little while, right?
This is a good strategy for pretty much all supplements, except maybe some things that you're taking for very specific reasons that are daily, like if you're taking adrenals or something.
Yeah, or like your D3, K2, you know, magnesium, those kinds of things, I think you just need on an ongoing basis. Those shouldn't be cycled. We're all low on them. We all need those on an ongoing basis. So I think if you're maybe like you're bean minerals, things like that, where where you have humic and fulvic acid to bind up, because I can't get away from glyphosates if I'm going to live in the US. So I want something that binds out glyphosate. So I think there's some things I think you just stay on all the time.
I kind of put that in my coffee, right? Danger coffee has a therapeutic dose of those minerals, because I also agree those are daily dose things.
Right. Those are things that you know, especially when you look at humic and fulvic acid, is one of the few things that are going to get rid of glyphosates. And I measure glyphosate levels on my patients. There is nobody that does not have high glyphosate. So you really have to stay on top of that, because we know they're linked to so many diseases. I will mention, when I said, is there too high or too much spermidine? So there are some studies, and this also came back, all the naysayers, whenever I talk about something or post something, and you get this, I'm sure, all the naysayers come out of the woodworks and say, oh my gosh, you're taking this and it's causing cancer. And that was there was a study that showed there was higher levels of spermidine in some cancers. Right. And so now everybody was like, oh my God, so spermidine is causing cancer. And the study would sort of imply that you have high levels of spermidine in cancers. So what does that mean? Well, what it means is that our body is trying to get rid of cancer. So this is that whole cause and effect confusion that occurs, where, what is my body going to do when I have cancer? Now, until it gets too distraught and too disturbed, I'm going to try and induce autophagy. I'm going to try and get rid of cancer. Now, eventually, the cancer cells take over, we don't do so well. So, of course, there should be higher levels of spermidine, because the body's actually trying to accelerate the polyamine pathway to actually help us fight the cancer. So when you read these studies, guys, you have to be a little careful. Are these causes? Are they effects? Because a lot of a lot of people who are coming after you for this stuff, they love the shock impact of saying, oh my gosh, you're just doing something that's going to cause cancer. Look at the study that showed spermidine, high levels of spermidine in cancer. So you have to sort of think, and you have to go back down to the pathway levels. And we know that this polyamine flux pathway is disturbed in cancers, and that higher levels of spermidine restore that.
And it's funny, if cancer makes a lot of something, people will argue that that causes cancer.
Right.
Even if there's no evidence.
Right.
And cancer is one of those weird metabolic conditions where I've had a variety of experts on the show. And the story we hear about cancer from, very Western trained doctors, even ones who, say they're longevity doctors, but don't think we can extend human life, that they don't show an understanding of the complex nature of cancer. And that said, there are some things like mold toxins and smoking and alcohol that we just know.
Yeah,
like,
right.
There's really no question about those being pro-cancer. But there's other times, so especially when, for some reason, we're coming after supplements, they'll talk about it, even though the cancer increase from pharmaceuticals might be 10 times higher, but they just don't talk about that for some weird reason.
Because we love shock impact of things, right? It's like semaglutide, everybody getting semaglutide face and losing all their muscle mass, which is complete and utter BS. And, these GLP-1 agonists are hugely beneficial drugs on a whole lot of bases. But the press loved hitting on this because everybody was starting to take it, and so the press loved it. And, people are going to read bad press a lot more than they read good press. So, you always have to remember that it's like the news. Nobody wants to give you the good news. It's only the bad news. And that's how a lot of these articles are done too, or at least what gets out to you in the press.
One of the more important pieces of evidence for the longevity effects of spermidine is simply that at about age 25 to 30, you start losing levels. So you can roughly predict someone's age based on the amount of spermidine in their tissues.
Right.
You get cellular decline as you age. So this is one of the many things that are a sign of cellular decline. So it's something that you can change. But do you take it on an empty stomach? Do you take it with fat? Do you take it with protein? Do you take it in the morning? Do you take it at night? Give me the perfect spermidine dosing and schedule for the average person who's healthy and wants to live a long time.
It's interesting because, you know, personally, I take it on the morning with in the morning with a little bit of fatty food or some food. And that's probably, you know, a good way to take it. It seems to be well absorbed even if you take it on empty stomachs, which is why I encourage you, if you're fasting, take it, because, again, you want that autophagy effect. You want that. It doesn't make you, you know, I very few people get nausea or anything like that from it. So like a lot of those vitamins where you like.
It's a fasting booster.
Or essential, you know, a critical piece to fasting, right? So I think you can take it. I have some people who really describe taking it at night helps their sleep. I've experimented with that a little bit. Like I have some people who, you know, open the capsules and they mix them into a little bit of a, you know, a tea or something. And they love that before bedtime. And they said it's really helped their deep sleep when they look at their Oura Ring data. I haven't noticed that in myself, but I have some patients who swear by it. They love their spermidine for sleep. I don't think there's a lot of documented evidence of that, but whatever. So I don't think there's a critical take it in the morning, take it in the evening, take it when it works for you. Play with it. Look at your Oura Ring data. Are you better when you take spermidine before you go to bed, right?
Yep.
So I just find with me, I'm a lot more compliant with my stuff I take in the morning. So I tend to throw in most of the things I can earlier in the day. And then I got obviously a few things you've got to take later or a couple of times a day. So I think with food, there's been shown to be, again, we can't measure plasma levels. So are you getting better absorption with food? Don't know, because we got to measure plasma levels. We need to measure intracellular levels. I think that in general, the recommendation is to take it with food. But I don't think it's really critically important one way or the other, honestly. It's one of those pretty forgiving supplements.
That was my conclusion as well. A lot of postbiotics don't need to be with food.
Right, you don't, right.
And so I don't notice a difference with or without food.
And yeah, you talked about the declining levels. You know, with age, and this might be one of the really good, and you're right, we forget that we start aging in our 20s. You know, people always think, oh, I'm super young. And really, our decline starts about 25. I mean, we start aging pretty darn early. And so when you look, for instance, one of the places where spermidine is found in very high, it's a semen, right? Because that's one of the ways it's got its name. Semen and breast milk has some of the highest levels. When you look at semen levels of spermidine, they definitely decline with the age of the male. And it seemed like males who were having fertility issues had much lower levels of spermidine in the semen too. And we also have now mouse studies in October, like fall of 2023. So just, you know, 6 months ago or so, published in Nature Aging, I think it was, they did studies in both culture, but in live mice as well, looking at fertility, because oocytes age pretty rapidly, right? So why we have a hard time getting pregnant after the age of 35, right? Or our fertility declines. It's also why, you know, they tell you if you had a baby later in life, you live longer. That's nothing to do with having the kid. It has to do with that you were able to get pregnant later in life, right? Because
yeah.
It means you're younger, your oocytes were younger. But ovaries age 5 times faster than the rest of our body. So reproductive aging is a sign of, you know, so the earlier you go into menopause, the earlier you can't have kids. Those are both signs of earlier or more rapid aging. And what they found is that spermidine, at least in mice, allowed their fertility to extend much, much longer. Mice have a pretty short time of fertility, and so extend much longer. Don't know in humans, but it makes sense. And, you know, if we have something, if we look at oxidative stress and all the things that damage eggs, then, or egg cells, then spermidine inducing autophagy and getting rid of damage is going to be beneficial, right? Getting rid of damaged cells. So I think particularly if you're younger and you're thinking of delaying having children, this is probably a really good supplement to take at least at a, you know, maybe a 3 milligram kind of dosing on a regular basis if you want to maintain fertility a little bit longer. Again, we need the human studies. We don't have it. That's true of so many of the things we did. I was just at a huge longevity docs event, sort of the top 100 longevity docs in the world. And we have this great little WhatsApp chat that we do all the time. And then we finally met in person. And And we talked about how we all need to get our data together, because this N of one data that you and I do all the time has to be, you know, put together so we can prove these things in humans. Right now, we have to go on the best data we have, which lots of times is simply mouse data, mice data.
Now, I think we might be in that group. I don't know. Or is that a different group?
Nah, it's just docs.
It's just docs. Okay. There's a longevity experts. That's a very similar group that I'm in there. And it's all docs except for me. I'm an honorary member. But it's interesting, the conversations that happen in those private groups versus what you see online.
Yeah.
Because there's so much good stuff happening in the clinic. Probably will never get studied by NIH or something like that, at least not with our current leadership in place.
I mean, that's the hard thing with all these things, guys. Everybody wants the data, give me the data. You know, if you wait until we have all the well-proven data on these things, you're probably, I'll be dead, you know, so, you know, maybe if you're 20, you've got at least a few years, but you know, it's like rapamycin. I'm willing to take the chance. If something's been proven safe and efficacious, well, we'll say safe because maybe we don't know its efficacy yet, but safe and efficacious in at least the animal models. And in my mind, in a cellular model, then I'm going to take it. I mean, I know you think the same way. You know, it's like, yeah. I'm willing to take the roll the dice.
It always makes me laugh when people are like, well, it's not proven safe. I'm like, okay, if you do nothing, what does it look like?
You're going to die, right?
If you do nothing, you're going to have 25 years of suffering and die broke without knowing your name in a diaper. Like that's the status quo. If anything you can do likely moves the needle away from that, even if your goal is just to extend your health span, which is a crappy, childish 1970s goal compared to extending your life and your health span, right? So, oh my God, someone will look you right in the eye and say, oh, there's not enough evidence for that. I'm like, there's plenty of evidence that doing nothing is worse than trying to do something. Right. So like, let's do something. And spermidine is an obvious.
We know the outcome of doing nothing. Absolutely know the outcome of doing nothing.
Right. And I'm just maybe fortunate that I got to experience being old in my late 20s, where you have prediabetes and arthritis and cognitive decline and high risk of stroke and heart attack, all that stuff.
I mean, honestly, when you look at like bad things in our life that happen, sometimes they end up being good. It's like that, right? Like, had that never happened to you, would you have gotten into this field? Would you be would you have the health you have now? Probably not, right?
Yeah.
As long as it is these bad things that sort of drive us, somebody has a heart attack and now they become the healthiest person in the world. I find a lot of life is like that, right? Some bad event pushes you to something better. And, you know, so, but I don't think you have to wait for that bad event. You can sort of look at people who have gone through it and start learning from them.
Yeah. It's one of the things that, you know, everything you have happening in your life that sucks right now, it probably will give you something good once you've gone through it and you have a chance to look for gratitude, even if it's a crappy little gratitude, at least one good thing happened.
Right.
And so it doesn't mean you have to like it, but it means you got something out of it. I would have rather not gone through that, but I'm really grateful I've been able to help people as a result of it.
Yeah, I mean, because look at you now, right?
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't be there. Who knows, but probably not.
Probably not. God knows what I'd be doing, psychopharmacology or something. That was my plan. When I made $6 million when I was 26 and lost when I was 28. But when I was 26, I'm like, I'm so done with tech. As soon as this company, you know, I get my 4 years of stock, I'm out and I'm going to get a PhD. And then, of course, I ended up working for another. Now, there's something about spermidine that we haven't talked about before, even when you were last on the show to talk about this. It was about 250 episodes ago. So it's been a little while. And it's hair growth in spermidine. Tell me what spermidine does for hair and the best way to use spermidine to make your hair better.
Honestly, it's one of the things that, it was actually probably one of the first things that was shown with spermidine was improvement in hair growth. You know, and there's some very good data on it, but it was very interesting for my patients. I would start hearing that, right? I wouldn't even tell them that story. I wouldn't tell them, oh, this might help your hair grow too, right? I would put them on it for some other reason. Their liver enzymes were high, something like that. And, you know, especially at the high dose, they would say, oh my gosh, my eyelashes are so much longer. We have this one patient, she sent me pictures and it was dramatic. I mean, her eyelashes were dramatically longer when she started doing this high dose spermidine. So we know that it actually, you know, induces or helps with hair growth. And again, that was actually one of the earliest studies that ever came out. I don't have that study in front of me, but that was one of the earliest studies that ever came out on this. I do think it takes a little bit of a higher dose, so probably like the dose you're kind of doing on a for a little while to start and to start inducing that. Hair growth is tough because like in post COVID, everybody lost their hair. I lost almost all my hair post COVID.
Wow. Spike protein does that.
Yeah, it's horrible, right? And we're seeing that all these people who lost hair after after that. And so so hair growth is tough because there's a whole lot of pieces, but immune dysfunction is one of the very important players there. So one of the things that we know spermidine does to assist the immune system, and this actually came out in like a 2022 article, actually, when they were studying kidney disease. But in 2022, an article in Molecular Medicine showed that spermidine blocks something called NLRP3. NLRP3, you're familiar with, is an inflammasome. It's a bad player. There is no disease that is not linked to high levels of NLRP3. So NLRP3, guys, is this inflammasome that initiates this big inflammatory response. It's okay to get a big inflammatory response acutely. If it sticks around, not a good thing, right? And you lose your hair and your macrophages start attacking your hair cells and your joints and your brain and everything else. So by inhibiting NLRP3, that may be one of the reasons that it's actually helping with the hair growth, is by inhibiting this inflammasome and restoring the immune system so you can actually stop destroying your own hair follicles, you know, and get yourself into a growth phase. There's a lot of other pieces there because spermidine actually strikes from a whole lot of angles there, but that reducing inflammatory state is really important. It's why I love it for joints, honestly. If you look at things that are elevated in arthritis is an immune-mediated disease. It is not a wear and tear disease. It is an immune-mediated disease, whether it's rheumatoid or osteoarthritis. And we know that we have very high levels of these NLRP3 inflammasomes. We know we have very high levels of something called interleukin-1 beta. There's not a lot of interleukin-1 beta blockers on the market, but spermidine does. Spermidine's been shown to lower this inflammatory cytokine.
It's a hard one to lower.
IL-6
is easy.
Right, IL-6 is easy. TNF-alpha is not hard. We have a lot of products. Lotus naltrexone works well for those, right? Interleukin-1 beta, not so much. I use Petacin polysulfate a lot for that, but spermidine does that, and it lowers this interleukin-1 beta, which is really triggered for kidney disease and for joint disease. So if any of you guys have osteoarthritis, I use high-dose spermidine in my osteoarthritis patients, especially before doing any kind of regenerative procedures on them, to try and get the cells into a much better state by blocking this inflammatory piece. And then that was, pretty recent article, Molecular Medicine 2022, showed this very significant reduction in the NLRP3 inflammasome and interleukin-1 beta. So, to me, it just confirmed what I was already seeing, with these patients. And intuitively knew because of the cellular pathways, but actually can have it nicely confirmed now in an article is great. And that's probably one of the reasons it's helpful in cancer too, is by blocking some of this inflammatory state. But that's, that's why it's so useful in kidney disease. I think we forget, kidneys are also, kidney disease is, there's, I think John Hopkins estimated 50% of people over the age of 60 have kidney dysfunction. I mean, 50%. So half of us are walking around with kidney dysfunction, and your doc will look at it and go, "Oh, well, your glomerular filtration rate 60, it's fine." Well, normal really should be greater than 80 if you have optimal kidney function, right?
Yep.
It starts to decline, but we have to make sure that we maintain kidney function because your kidneys are one of your key detox organs, right? So if my kidney function is declining, and I'm going to have more and more problems, and we don't really have great ways to treat this decline in kidney function. But spermidine has been shown to do that.
Yeah. In Superhuman, my big longevity manifesto, there were four big killers that you have to avoid. And it was number one, diabetes, which is a precursor to cancer, heart disease, and Alzheimer's. Like, don't get those and you'll probably live longer. But the fifth killer, if I wanted to go one higher, would have been avoid kidney disease. And it is caused primarily by two things. One is high blood pressure, which is treatable. By minimizing insulin, or at least lowering it to safe levels, not necessarily too low, and by taking potassium and whatever. But the second one is eating a lot of plants that contain oxalate, because 70% of kidney stones are oxalate, not caused by phosphorus from eating meat and alcohol.
Right. I mean, metabolic control is very key to kidney disease, right? But so is endothelial function. So when you talk about why hypertension... hypertension is just a sign that you have endothelial dysfunction. Your blood vessels aren't pliable. So you have to work on endothelial dysfunction. And actually, that's another place where spermidine actually was shown, is improving. And in the cardiovascular studies, recent study, actually 2023, I think it was fall 2023, there was a report on spermidine and endothelial function of blood vessels in post heart attacks, and there was significant improvement and revascularization of blood vessels, again, in mice,
yep,
in blood vessels with that. So that's one of the reasons it's protective of kidneys, because you're right, hypertension is a culprit, but it's really hypertension is the first sign that you actually have endothelial dysfunction. And guys, you know, when your doctor's like, oh, 130 over 85, that's fine. It's actually not. I mean, an optimal blood pressure is really 115 over 70. I'll let it go up to 120 over 80. Above that is hypertension. Really, if you look at endothelial dysfunction above 115 over 70, you still have to start focusing on improving vascular function, improving endothelial function. You have to have these nice pliable blood vessels, or you do get kidney disease. Kidneys are very, very sensitive to that dysfunctional blood flow. So that's one of the reasons kidney function starts to reduce as we age. And you're right, it's a key player. Now, caveat there is when your docs measure GFR, like in you, Dave, who eats a lot of protein,
yeah,
or if you're taking creatine as a supplement, or if you're really muscular, you can sometimes look like you have very poor kidney function, because kidney function is an estimation based off creatinine.
Uh-huh.
And creatinine will be fooled by creatine or high muscle mass or high protein. So your GFR, your glomerular filtration, may look very poor. Caution you guys who have that. You eat a lot of protein. You take creatine as a supplement, like all of you should be, 5 grams of creatine. You know, then you might look worse. I always measure what's called a cystatin C. So something to remember, ask your doctor to measure cystatin C. It's a much better measure of kidney function for people who are healthy.
I love it that you said that because are estimates. Even people who are on very low carb diets, your cholesterol calculations are horribly wrong.
Right.
Because they think you're average. And even when they tell you, oh, you know, your kidney function is where it should be for your age, you should be outraged.
For your age, right? Don't you hate that?
Yeah. What the hell? Like, I'm sorry, I identify as being 30 years old. So, you know, how dare you not respect my age? Because, look, if they're saying you're aging like a normal person, you already failed.
Right.
And then you're looking at the health span and that, like, fake longevity stuff where, like, oh, you know, you can't extend life, so just work out all the time, which is nonsense. You got to protect your kidneys. So spermidine is a way to do that. And the other thing is Clotho, which we're not going to talk about in this show, but I wrote about that in the book as well. And I'm about to go be one of the first humans to get Clotho gene therapy to raise my Clotho levels.
Oh, lucky you. Yeah, Clothos is actually, and I know there's a company that's been working for a long time on that. And so you're lucky to get that. You know, it's going to be really a huge player for people who have, like, polycystic kidney disease. Clothos may actually be the answer for those people. So, you know, life-saving, because that's a disease you really don't have a lot of control over.
Yeah.
So Clothos, guys, you know, which is kind of our longevity gene as well, but it's really critical to kidney function. So, you know, lucky you, Dave.
Well, it's funny because both Clotho and spermidine, they affect kidney function and cognitive function, and they're both core longevity substances. So I look at the stuff that I always take. I mean, I might pause for a little while, like for a weekend or something, just to get cyclical levels, but things that are my permanent longevity stack, spermidine life is on that.
Yeah.
And if I could buy Clotho, I would, but you can't, and it's not digestible anyway.
I think we'll get there where it will be more available even beyond gene therapy. I think we will, look at some of the companies are doing. I think we will get there with Clotho. I hope so. Because a lot of these gene therapies are still cost prohibitive to most of us.
Oh, yeah. That's a temporary problem. Cell phones were cost prohibitive and didn't work very well in 1980 as well. But look at them now, right?
Yeah. I mean, the brain studies with spermidine, where some of the first studies that came out, the Smart Age study, which was 2018, showed that, and this was actually in humans. So we actually do have some human studies. Showed over 12 months significant improvement in adults with cognitive decline. So, you know, we have the data on brain, even in depression. There was a really good study on mental status and spermidine. We know it improves, and it makes sense, right? If I'm lowering inflammation, if I'm increasing vascular function, you know, if I am improving autophagy, then my brain function will be better. Really, there's no organ that is not going to be helped by addressing all those factors.
So there's going to be a stack of things that we know work for longevity. And at this point, we know enough to say we might have to change the dosing amount and schedule based on who you are and what you do in your state. But these are things you want to keep elevated for the course of your exceptionally long life.
You know, one of the things we talked about is you are, you know, there's a stack, right? So how can we address these? And one of the things Spring Life recently did is, you guys are all familiar with NAD, right? And it's important because NAD is sort of the, you know, currency to make ATP. So a lot of companies now are trying to say, okay, well, how can we maybe attack multiple pathways? So Spermidine recently kind of came out with this product that has other things in it. So it has this interesting compound called ribitril. And ribitril is this compound that is what's called an I-kappa beta kinase. I-kappa beta is really highly linked to the inflammatory cascade. There's a lot of cancer drugs that are I-kappa beta kinase inhibitors. So basically by blocking I-kappa beta kinase, and I use a drug called Emlexinox as well for that, you can actually prevent cancers and things like that. But also, ribitril has this very interesting effect on phosphodiesterase 4 and 5. And you guys will know PDE5 inhibitors are things like Viagra and Cialis, which are also very linked to longevity, right? Particularly brain.
I take microdose Cialis every day because it makes you live longer.
Exactly. Right. It's not because you want to be walking around with an erection. It's erection is because you want to live longer. I have my women will go to the pharmacy and fill, you know, Cialis, and the pharmacists are like, you know, but it improves cognitive function. It improves vascular flow. It helps support kidney function. It is a longevity drug. So what they did is they said, okay, well, we'll mix a PDE5 inhibitor. So ribitril acts as a PDE5 inhibitor.
Ribotril, it's
R-I-B-E-T-R-I-L. Yeah.
That's not a drug I played with, but I will after this.
Yeah, I think it's a patented compound.
Okay.
I think it's found, it's like called mitoactive or something like that, but it's a patented compound, not really. So it's a PDE5 and also a PDE4 inhibitor. So phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitors are really, have a lot of research going on in them, also treating diseases like cancers, autoimmune disease, COPD. So there's a lot of drugs coming to market, really expensive drugs, I will say. Like, these are the $20,000 a month drugs that are coming to market as PDE4 inhibitors. So this compound has an effect on the I-kappa beta kinase, the PDE4, the PDE5. They mixed that with spermidine. So now we're attacking all these other pathways. And they mixed it with some nicotinamide. A little D-ribose and nicotinamide with the, you know, the, again, nicotinamide being one of your precursors to NAD. Now, where some of these products scare me, and all you guys who love your NAD and all your NAD precursors, right? Here is my 2 cents on that. If you, your NAD levels, they do drop as you age.
Yep.
And one of the main reasons for that is because if you've got this bucket of NAD, there's actually a bigger hole in the bucket. So there's enzymes that are depleting the NAD.
You have to fix the enzymes, right?
You have to fix the enzymes. You have to block the enzymes. Now, one of those is you can use apigenin to fix, P38. You can use apigenin to fix. And there's another one that's a little harder, and that's called NNMT. And NNMT is a much worse enzyme to be upregulated, because NNMT is upregulated in cancer, in visceral fat cells, in senescent cells. So you guys who keep pouring NAD into your bucket, and you're old or have cancer, precancer lesions, or you have some visceral fat cells, those guys are stealing all your NAD. So you keep filling the bucket, and they're like, great, we've got more, because they just keep accelerating NNMT. There's some peptides that will block it, but they're block NNMT, but they're expensive. So we recently worked with a company in Europe to bring over, like spermidine, another compound called 1-MNA. 1-MNA is a really ideal blocker of NNMT. In fact, you could probably use it alone to boost NAD. And the problem with nicotinamide, you guys also, you saw the study, Dave, where they showed that study that showed high dose nicotinamide, actually even long dosing of nicotinamide, raised cardiovascular risk, right? And that was because it converted to something called 4-pyridone, and 4-pyridone is really bad. Well, 1-MNA, very interestingly, even though it's one of the byproducts of nicotinamide, does not convert. You can't raise 4-pyridine levels with it. It will raise them to just the right level and then get excreted. So 1-MNA is a much safer alternative, and it's why we work so hard, much like spermidine, to get it here to the U.S. That was not very easy, but to get it brought over here to the U.S. so that we could actually have a safer way of replacing NAD.
Wow.
So I think if you did this product, right, which has your spermidine, it has some nicotinamide in it, it has this ribitril, which looks a very interesting thing, and to block for your PDE4, PDE5, and I-kappa beta kinase, and then you use a little apigenin and the 1-MNA. I personally just use 1-MNA myself, just as my NAD boost, that you're going to have a really nice stack with a couple of compounds. So it might be a nice thing to look at you know, for you guys who are taking a lot of, you know, you're taking this and this and this and this, it might be a nice kind of compound to look at.
Beautiful. And that is a supplement or?
It's one of the new spermidine supplements.
Okay.
That they've come out with.
Excellent. And is that from Spermidine Life?
Yeah, from Spermidine Life.
Okay, cool. So I'll switch to that stuff. Why not?
Yeah, it's a little packet, it's a little sachet packet, so it's nice.
Oh man, stupid packets. I don't want any more packets. Guys, I take 180 supplement, actually 156 a day right now. But 156 packets, I would shit. Like there's too much fiber in there. Like, I'm sorry.
The problem is it's hard to get like a capsule that has, you know, that stuff in it. So yeah, maybe for you it's better to just take your, you know, take your spermidine, take your, you know, take your Cialis, you know, and in my mind, take one MNA instead of NAD precursors, because I think the data is becoming more and more compelling about that. But, you know, whatever you want. Otherwise, take your NAD precursors plus one MNA. And that might be a way to substitute, because I agree with you. I literally have, you know, my water bottle, I've just thrown 8,000 packets into it and now it tastes like shit. So, you know, it's hard for me to drink all day because it's mostly just dust. So I agree with you. It does become a little difficult, and because the problem with some of these, when you're trying to put a lot of thing into a supplement, you just can't put it into one little capsule.
Yeah, I feel you. It feels like the solution for longevity, just for the world, is not to have 25 packets or 25 canisters of powder to take every day, because that sucks. And the worst thing would be to mix them all into one powder and sell that, because you don't. No one needs the exact same ratios of all this stuff.
Right, right. And that is a problem. And you see a lot of companies doing that, right? Putting together these little packets, and I'm not a real fan of that, because number one, I like to sort of toggle things around with my patients, and I use different dosing on different patients for different things. So I am a little more of a fan of, you know, even if it means opening a few more bottles, to actually kind of sometimes separate these things out. But this is for you guys who want sort of a simple approach. I do think this is a very interesting product, and you know, I'm kind of eager about it.
We'll come out with pills after this episode. I know that I've harassed lots of companies into taking packets and making pills, including like the urolithin A stuff. I'm like, come on, just give me pills. And here's the thing. Most people think they can only swallow one or two pills because they never thought about it.
Yeah, I can only swallow 50 at a time.
Yeah, I do 50 at a time. In fact, I kind of shamed Liver King once. I was just teasing, but he's like, anyone who can take more than 20 pills is more manly than me. And I'm like, I just, you know, pull my shirt off. I'm like, I'm going to take 40 pills, you know? And, but it's like, it's a weird flex is what Brian Johnson says. But guys, if you drank beer in college, it's not that. Just go from one to two, go from two to three. And all of a sudden, like my girlfriend's like, oh my God, I can swallow eight pills at a time. And it's not even hard. Why did I not know this my whole life?
Right. It is funny when you start taking more, because it would take you your entire day to take them all one at a time. So,
but I love it that you can go deep on all these topics, because we weren't planning to necessarily go into all these, but you're very well-rounded in your knowledge here. And I should have mentioned this earlier, but guys, Spermidine Life is giving you 25% off because you listen to the show, which is a big discount. And thank you, Spermidine Life. Spermidinelife.us, use code ASPRY25. So that's a big savings on spermidine. So buy the big pills, because now they're probably the same price as the little pills.
Yeah, I would recommend you guys get some of the higher dose ones at least cycle through those occasionally, right?
Yeah.
Even if your baseline is, unless you're 20 and you just want to maintain fertility for a while and you feel great and your life's perfect, then you could probably get away with the 1 milligram.
And I also just want to say this. There are people of all economic brackets listening to the show. I don't have space in my stomach for all the supplements that I could afford. So it turns out all of us have three things that control what we're willing to take. There's cost, which is obvious. There's the amount of time and effort it takes to do it, right? How much energy does it take to do it? And the other one is, how much does it suck? So it's time, money, and pain. Right. And what that means is that you have to look at, okay, what are the biggest goals for you? And how much pain, how much time, and how much money is available to allocate to those right now? Now, in my 20s, I allocated 20% of my paycheck towards health and wellness because I was so damn sick. Right. And it was not easy. In fact, it caused relationship problems with the person I was with in my 20s. And she's like, why do you spend so much money on all this stuff? I'm like, because my brain doesn't work without it. And I'm in pain all the time and things like that. So I just want you to make efficient and intelligent choices and not to feel like you have to do everything. I don't do everything. I just try to know what everything is and then choose the everything I'm willing to do. So 25% off is a good savings if you want to try this. And if you're saying that's not my thing, I want to save money, start with intermittent fasting. Just don't overdo it and you'll get some of the benefits.
That's cheap, right?
Yeah, or get the discounted bottle, spermidinelife.us, code ASPRY25, and take one every 2 days as something to encourage your gut bacteria.
Or take it while you're doing a fast so you get that benefit of the autophagy. But I also remind, that's what Dave and I were talking about, cycling supplements. So if you're like, oh my gosh, this is so expensive, think about cycling things, right? So what I do with my patients who have a fixed income that they can spend on supplements, I go, okay, for a while we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this. So there's not more than maybe 6-7 things at one time, right? You've got your baseline supplements, and then we have, I'll do a month of spermidine, and then I may do a month of this and a month of that.
Yeah.
And that way it makes it more palatable, less supplements and less money, and it becomes a better way of thinking about it. And not necessarily a bad thing for your body. Like I said, when you over supplement, you can start to create problems. It's like too many antioxidants are horrible for us. We need oxidative stress. So if you're taking a ton and ton of antioxidants and you never stop, you're not doing yourself any good. So think about that. You know, when you're feeling overwhelmed, just say, okay, I can do this for a while, and then I can do this for a while.
Right. Such good advice. So if you're saying, you know, I have a budget, that's okay. Everyone has a budget, and doing different things on different days is a way to stretch your dollars a lot. And because I really respect this problem. When I was dealing with the very beginnings of my health problems from mold, I actually worked at Baskin-Robbins, scooping ice cream. And I welded Toyota truck frames. I put auto parts in boxes to help pay for my college. I also started a t-shirt e-commerce company. Like I did everything. I was scrappy because I didn't have any money. And that's what happens when you're out of money.
And you have to prioritize your health over, do I need a $100,000 car or do I need my health? I think, you know, we all prioritize putting money into our 401ks for retirement and not thinking about putting money into ourselves, because otherwise my retirement's going to be miserable, you know. And hopefully the goal being that you never want to retire because you feel good, you feel active, and you want to be productive. So I think that's it. I really think the number of people I see come to my office driving their $100,000 car in, and I mention a supplement that's expensive, like, oh, I'm not doing that. And, you know, and I say, well, get a cheaper car.
I drive a 10-year-old Jeep. So there you go.
Yeah, that's where you put your money on the health, right?
My hyperbaric chamber and my supplements cost more than my car.
Yeah.
That's just how it is, right?
Perfect.
I'm also, I need help on how to allocate my own time, energy, and dollars and just suck on biohacks and supplements. So at the biohacking conference this year, I'm planning to launch a really detailed data-driven AI tool to guide you. If you only have $6, here's what to do. If you have $600, here's what to do. And the weird thing is, your goal is not the same as my goal, is not the same as your partner's goal. We all have slightly different goals. So if we can actually use the data and the tools we have now to guide you to know what do you really want first, and then how do you get there in the shortest possible time, it makes it so cool, because then you really know where to focus when you go into your doctor. It's like I took care of my basic minerals and vitamins and all that stuff because I knew what to do, because that's what the data says. And now I need help with the really cool high-end stuff. So it should waste less time and less money for everyone who uses it. So I'm really
excited.
That's
really cool.
It's like, just tell me what to do. We all want that.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to do that on this show, but there's 1,200 episodes. Like, have you even heard the last episode with Dr. Yerth? It was awesome. But how much time do you have to listen to this podcast? I don't know. I thank you for listening. But if I can give you everything I know in a chatbot, which I'm doing as part of this, yes, I'm going to do it, because I don't think most people have time to go to medical school like you have and study for 30 years. And it's hard to get a meeting with someone this qualified. So I think this is a necessary tool for biohackers. And I'm so excited to be able to bring this to you guys. And of course, Spermidine Life is going to be right in there because, well, it matters.
Perfect.
All right. I have one thought for you. So topical spermidine.
Ah, topical spermidine. Yeah. This is funny because I had read these articles on topical spermidine back when you and I first finally got spermidine, right? Actually, even before that, when I had these weird little green things I was taking from somewhere I bought.
We're so similar.
And I had read this article about how much topical spermidine improved collagen function in skin. I'm pretty skinny, so like the hardest thing for me is saggy skin. And you know, and so I was like, oh, great. So I just, you know, opened up all my spermidine, I crushed my little things and I put them in my face cream. I started putting on, it was the worst thing. It was like this green mess and, you know, and got all over, made a big green mess over my pillow initially. And at least the other spermidine wasn't green. So that helped. And so now, recently, Young Goose, I left, you listed all the company, but it's an incredible company. So Young Goose actually sort of decided, oh, wow, we need spermidine in our products. So they actually made now a great, and it's much, much nicer feeling. It has a tiny bit of green tinge, but not much, from some of the other things in it, actually. But the spermidine is, I think it's a combination of spermidine, NAD. NAD topically is great, and copper peptides. Copper peptides, amazing for skin, right?
GHK copper peptide is a major longevity compound.
Major longevity, both sub-Q injections, but also topically or for wound healing, things like that. And so they put mixed copper peptides, a little bit of resveratrol, and they made a face cream out of it. So they sort of partnered with Spermidine on this, Spermidine Life on this, and it is a really good product. It feels so nice on your skin. I just started using it recently, but I also already noticed some dark spots going away. I mean, it is an incredible product.
Founders of Young Goose, when they first started, came on the show and shared their product. And they've been at the biohacking conference too. And
right. They're always there. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I think they're there this year as well. By the way, guys, it's coming up here just in a short period of time, biohackingconference.com. And I love seeing collaboration between different brands where like you have a great ingredient.
And no, that's cool, right? When you see these different companies actually getting together.
Yeah. I run into this problem now where, okay, I take my Spermidine Life, so I've got my internal version, but I have like six bottles of amazing stuff that each has its own set of longevity compounds that don't overlap. And I'm like, I don't know how much oil my skin can absorb. So you like slap on like five things and it's like, I don't really want to, I own like one bottle on my bathroom counter because I'm a guy. And I have like three things I spray in my hair and you know. So I want the one skincare mush to rule them all. And maybe this is the one.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty complete, right? It's pretty, you know, it's pretty robust. At least, again, you could do this one day, something else, you know. But I think it's a pretty robust product. I think they did a really nice job with this product. I mean, I love that company anyway, but this product I really like. Because it was a little bit with their products that's like, there was like eight of them, you know, when you're doing their whole regimen.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a nice catch-all for those of you guys who want a simplified routine. I think it looks like a nice catch-all of everything.
That makes sense. One thing that doesn't get appreciated enough in the world is that topical absorption oftentimes is the same as intravenous absorption and way better than swallowing it. So I don't know the systemic effects of spermidine, but some peptides are so powerful that getting them on your skin in the right formula trumps even an injection.
GHK copper is like that, right? High enough dose. I don't know what kind of dosing they have in this product, but GHK copper, lots of times when I have somebody who doesn't want to give themselves injections, because GHK copper is so important to longevity too, I'll just have them use a lot topically. It ends up being a little more pricey, but I'll use a lot topically, get the skin effects, and they'll get some systemic absorption of it. So you're right. That is a really nice way. And I don't know what the systemic absorption, I think part of the spermidine effect is going through the gut. So you're probably going to get a lot less of the benefits from it, taking it topically. So it's probably going to be more isolated to skin. But for the GHK copper, that probably is actually a very nice way to get some GHK copper into your system.
Well, Dr. Yerth, thank you for coming on The Human Upgrade today and just sharing the latest on spermidine. And thank you, Spermidine Life, 25% off, spermidinelife.us, code ASPRI25. Totally, totally respectable savings. And guys, it's a foundational longevity supplement, and the evidence is very strong for that, which is why it's on here, why Dr. Yerth is on here, and why you are here. So thank you for listening. I will see you at the Biohacking Conference or online.
Thanks, guys.
You're listening to The Human Upgrade with Dave Asprey.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.